from Quite the Thing Media.
Hi, this is Keith from the first episode of podcast. Thank you for joining Jeff, the podcast father, on his journey across the indie landscape, finding and sharing all the great things everyone is making and doing. He's the Indie Podcaster.
You've been searching for a podcast. Want to know about some great artists? Yeah. You've come to the right place. Indie Podcaster, with your host, the podcast father.
Are you ready for another episode of Indie Podcaster? Here we are. By we, I mean me, Jeff, a.k.a. Podcast Father Edward Havens, is still here. I am getting him in trouble at home, so we got to get this introduction done. He's got a big date ahead of him tonight.
It's not that big of a date. I just got to get ready to go spend time with the family for Thanksgiving, even though by the time anybody hears this, it'll already be past Thanksgiving.
Yeah, true. Sounds good to me, though. You have a podcast that is a fun, loving family enjoyment for everybody. Tell us about it.
Well, it's called the Film Jerk Podcast. It's a uniquely crafted journey through 1980s cinema. I'm not sure if it's exactly for everybody, because on the next episode, which will obviously be out by the time anybody hears this introduction, one of the movies I'm talking about is the infamous movie from 1980 called Caligula, which was one of the very few hardcore porn movies to ever feature major actors like Peter O'Toole and Malcolm McDowell, and the whole story of how that came to be. So not quite sure it's for the whole family.
Yeah, I shouldn't have said that at all. It's not for the whole family. But if you enjoy learning about 80s cinema from a very knowledgeable person, and it sounds like this is going to be going off the tracks on a little bit of the crazy wild side of you, Edward. So I'm excited.
Well, it's one of the things that I regularly do on the show is talk about little independent distributors who are long forgotten because they never lasted outside of the 80s. But there were a lot of distributors in the 80s who ever only distributed one movie. And so there's no way to build a specific show around that. So instead, what I'm doing is I'm taking I call it the orphans, and I take a couple of the orphans on each show and talk about them, and because that's the only way I can really weave them into the storyline.
You complete me, Edward. Anyway, I'm going to share this awesome conversation I had with Gwendolyn Dulski, philosophy professor. I know I sent over all the details to these people beforehand last week, Edward. Did you get a chance to look into some of the cool things Gwendolyn's up to?
I've been looking at her Twitter page, and I find the Good is in the Details Twitter page to be very fascinating. There's a lot of great information there. I love the way that she has the podcast description set up, where we learn what we didn't know we didn't know. I love when people do stuff like that.
Let me read the full podcast description for you, Edward, and get your opinion on it here. Good is in the Details is hosted by Gwendolyn Dulski, PhD. Each episode is a conversation with experts from a variety of fields who can tell us more about what is the good life, what are the details, what does it mean to live life well.
That's actually sounds fascinating to me, but does it matter what I think?
Not really.
Not really.
One of the best taglines ever. You need to get a trademark on that, man. Oh, I love it, man. That is money making. Oh, man. Well, Edward and I will quit wasting all your time about all of our inside jokes that we love so much, and we will let you hear this interview. But before we do that, I'm going to take care of a little business. Woo, woo, woo. You know it. This podcast would not exist without the awesome engagement I get from the community. If you're not in contact with me, I highly encourage you to reach out to me on Twitter at @podcast_father or hit me up under the contact section on my website, podcastfather.com. If you really like what I'm doing, you can buy me a coffee or leave me a review on Apple Podcast or your favorite podcast listening platform. This podcast and myself are proud members of Quite the Thing Media. This network is awesome. It has podcasts that speak to you. Great network full of independent content creators. Go on site and check them out. QuiteTheThingMedia.com. All the music used on this podcast, I credit to the artist Young Karts. Go to the site and listen to the music. YoungKartBeats.com. The sponsors of this podcast are amazing. I highly encourage you to show them love just like you do me. Pod page. You can build a beautiful podcast website in 5 minutes. Automatically create a beautiful, listener-friendly podcast website from your RSS feed. Customize the design, get a professional look going. You'll be proud of all your work in just a few clicks. Make it easy and simple. Make sure you go online and create your podcast website, podpage.com. Flex Uptime. If you are a true crime, paranormal, scary, or comedy podcaster looking to find new listeners, consider submitting an episode to Indie Drop-In. Get more listeners, get more exposure. Submit an episode. Go online to indiedropin.com/creators. Oh, hell yeah, Riverside FM is great. Your online recording studio. The easiest way to record studio, quality podcasts, and video interviews from anywhere. If you're a podcaster or content creator, you must go to riverside.fm right now to get started. That's enough of the business. Now it's time to jump into this awesome conversation, which is powered by riverside.fm. Gwendolyn, thank you for taking a few minutes to chat with me today. It's nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. We were talking before this and getting into some good details. And I said, hey, we have to save it for this conversation. Mm-hmm. It's hard not to, though, like once you just meet somebody to start, you know, just sharing information. But no, thanks again. And I'll let you take a second to introduce yourself.
Okay. Yeah, I'm Gwendolyn Dolsky. I'm a philosophy professor, and I produce and co-host a podcast called Good is in the Details with Rudy Sallow, and he's a lawyer in LA. We knew each other way back when, and then we reconnected as adults and then got to doing this together. And the goal of the show is to learn what we didn't know we didn't know. And we invite experts on to talk about the underscoring ideas that drive their work.
And I did get to listen to 2 episodes. We were just talking about one of the ones I listened to, but it is super neat. And it's kind of niche in a way, right? Because it is unique, but there's great information with it. How long have you had this podcast? I know beforehand we talked about some other things we'll get into, but how long have you been doing Good is in the Details?
For a couple of years. And I think that what really is the drive behind it is that when I'm in the classroom, and like I said, I teach philosophy, I have so many students who are not philosophy majors. They're taking my classes for general ed, but they're enjoying the conversations and they're enjoying the thinking. They're enjoying the ideas. And I just had the suspicion that maybe some of those conversations could be brought out into a general public, that there's a lot of people who would still want to learn. And it's also that idea of I get to be the student again. So with the experts, I'm not the professor in the room, but I'm also inquiring about their work. And my students listen to the podcast, and it's good for them to see, I hope, the joy of being curious, that when you, you know, receive an education, that the real marker of a good education is that you continually want to learn. So they get to see me in action as a student as well.
Amazing. That's awesome. So explain to us exactly what your education is and in the detail. Just, we know your major, you got a PhD, but break that down for us a little bit.
Yeah, I actually, from my first semester of college and undergrad, when I took a philosophy class, I knew that I was just in love with it. I had to declare it as my major. And so I declared that as my major. It was focused in political theory a bit. And then I thought I was going to go to law school, and I applied to law school and graduate school, and I got into both. And then I realized, wait a minute, I really, really want to study philosophy. I think I was just saying law school to make everybody else feel comfortable. You know, because when you say you're studying something like philosophy, you're going to get the question, what are you going to do with that? What are you going to do with that? And I don't think I was being completely honest with myself until I got accepted into graduate school. And I just have fallen in love with reading these, you know, ancient texts, medieval texts, contemporary texts that all have to do with the big ideas of what is justice? Do you have a mind? What is real? What is the distinction between right and wrong? And, you know, what is the meaning of life? I've just fallen in love with those kinds of ideas and continued studying it. And now I'm at Cal Poly Pomona. That's in California, Cal State University. And I've been teaching there since 2006.
Awesome. You've built up some experience over time. And it's awesome that you were able to like say, this is actually what I want to do with my life. Because I know a lot of people, for a lot of different reasons, kind of feel obligated to go down a certain path. Like you said, I had a friend in the same boat. Law school just had to be the next thing, not necessarily what he wanted to do. And you see that a lot of the time, the people that are able to like break that and break free and do what they want to do seem to be the ones that find that they have that happy ending, I guess, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
you can't second guess yourself. So I bet it's hard to like actually make that step.
Yeah, you have to have faith in that you're, you know, you have an intuition of what is really fuels you, you know, what makes you feel good, what makes you feel happy, what makes you feel alive. And I hope that I also impart that onto my students. I tell them, I want you to enjoy your life. That's what I want. So when we're talking about these ideas, I want it to be so that when you go out into the world, you are more thoughtful about things and that you enjoy thinking about things. And so then that's how the podcast came about, was really bringing that, using the podcast as a different medium, I guess, of learning at ideas, looking at different areas and seeing, you know, what are the big ideas that drive all of that. And my co-host, Rudy, is a lawyer and he's got a great personality. And he kind of brings in, if I get to be a bit too bookish, you know, he brings in a different angle so that it can be more understandable for everybody else. And he's got this great wit about him that makes the show, I think, really, really work.
You keep using the word idea. And that's like, that's a major thing with philosophy and like psychology, mm-hmm. because it's so awesome because there's not always a right or wrong answer, right? With what you're doing.
Yeah. Like we had one of my favorite episodes. It was from season one and we had an FBI agent on. And the question that I had for him is, what is justice? I was curious to know how an FBI agent would answer that. And it was really interesting. We also had a plastic surgeon on and she specializes on the face and on noses. And so I wanted to know, well, what is beauty? So those are the kinds of things that I wanted to know that was going on. We recently did one because in politics right now, you have the big infrastructure bill. So we had a guest on who was an expert on that. She was a journalist and wrote about transportation and infrastructure. And my question was, what is infrastructure? Because that seems to be the big debate. Everyone agrees that we need infrastructure, but no one is agreeing on the definition of infrastructure. So that's where I'm like, you know, using philosophy to try to figure out some of these practical applications in the way we navigate our life.
That depends what the definition of is. No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. Clinton. Hey, you know what? For one of my classes, we're talking about Monica Lewinsky right now. It's for my philosophy of sex and love class, because we're talking about the way in which a woman's character can be completely leveled when there is a nude photo or any hint of sexuality. And we were talking about the contrast between how Bill Clinton came out of that as opposed to Monica Lewinsky. You know, Monica Lewinsky is, you know, flattened to that moment or moments in the Oval Office or with Bill Clinton. But Bill Clinton, yeah, depends on what is. And he is still, he actually became more popular during his presidency because everybody liked him as a president. So he was allowed this fullness of character and Monica Lewinsky wasn't. But yeah, we were just talking about that in my class.
I don't mind going off on rabbit holes. I'll be the first to say that. So you think he could get away with that today?
No, I don't think it's really interesting how things have changed from the 90s, that the woman was the one who was to blame. She was the one who, because, and I think the reason why was because it's almost as though if a woman is sexual, then that is considered inappropriate or mutually exclusive from being a professional or something like that. But when a man is sexual, it is not mutually exclusive from what it means to be a man. But I think that because of the way that things have been working out lately, and there's been a lot more awareness, that even people in politics who have been a champion of Bill Clinton have had to take another look at his behavior and they kind of have to work through some of those ideas. Yeah. So I think that it's definitely different now. My thought is when it comes to women and sexuality and let's say progress, it does not matter to me what the ethnicity, religion, age, size, first language of the woman is. It doesn't matter to me how many CEOs you have. It doesn't matter to me how many homemakers you have. You can really, for me, measure progress when a woman does not walk in haste to her car at night. And I think as long as that is a truth, then there is a lot of work to do. So we can talk about, you know, like perception of sexuality and stuff like that, but woman still is kind of considered the object of desire. And so there's not as much consequence to men who act in that way. But I don't think that it would be exactly the same for Bill Clinton, but I still think that Monica Lewinsky would have had a hard time.
I agree 100% with that. No, I completely agree with that. For him, wouldn't be able to do that, but I'm not sure it would be too much different for her, the fallout, fortunately.
Yeah.
I'm going to take a minute here to tell you about a fine sponsor of this podcast, Indie Drop-In. If you're a true crime, paranormal, scary, or comedy podcaster looking to find new listeners, consider submitting an episode to be featured on Indie Drop-In shows. If your episode meets some minimum requirements, Indie Drop-In will play your episode to real listeners. The best part is, the listeners like your show. Indie Drop-In provides easy links for them to subscribe. It's 100% free. You get to drop your feed into a established feed that already has actual, real listeners. This is great, guys. This is an amazing way to grow your audience. These listeners are already there. They listen to your episode on Indie Drop-In feed. They will go over and find your podcast and become a subscriber and love it. Greg, the creator of Indie Drop-In, just absolutely loves being involved in the independent podcast community. He is a great podcast mind. Make sure you give him a follow on Twitter at Indie Drop-In. But more importantly, go to indiedropin.com/creators. Get the submission going and submit an episode of your podcast into the Indie Drop-In feed. Hurry now. Get to it. I can tell that you're really into just this genre of things, which is awesome. But you know what's interesting to me when I'm thinking about this? You know, I went to school for marketing and business management. So obviously it wasn't like this kind of talk, but even in like a college university setting, you're allowed to be much more opinionated with the way you're teaching versus a, let's say, secondary, like high school, middle school, or whatever. Seems like the government really wants to have a grip on that. But the university level, you get personalities, and I'm not saying it in like a bad way, but like yourself, and we've all had professors like that, who are able to educate in a reasonable, opinionated manner, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. Because university professors are hired based on their publications and their area of expertise. And so in order to protect academic freedom, they do, say things that oftentimes are not in line with maybe the general public discourse. And yeah, there's a real tension there with protecting that freedom, because at the same time, I mean, education should do a couple of things. It should do something to replenish the culture, whereas, you know, you're creating good citizens who have an awareness of their history and that stuff. But it should also be a movement forward. And that movement and forward sometimes implies that there is a rejection of what we think we know. And that's where you have a bit of a tension, because the university is basically the home for thinking and examining what it is that we think we know. And this can be in science. This can be in engineering. This can be in philosophy. This can be in sociology, psychology, where basically you have a place to study all of the knowledge that is out there and to either reject it or expand on it. And so that's where I think you get like this tension of sometimes when professors are going against the cultural grain, but by the same token, that's what it means to be a thinker. Does that make sense?
No, it does make sense. And we'll get turned back more towards the podcasting here in a minute, but we were talking beforehand and you touched upon it a little bit. What's your preference? Like all the students that are majoring in that being in your class, or like you said, kind of like a general course where you'll have students of all different kinds of majors in your class. What's your preference?
I don't have a preference, honestly. I like all of them from all different backgrounds, because they bring something else to the classroom. And especially since I'm getting older and I have lived with a lot of the texts for a long time, they are reading texts with fresh eyes and they're a different generation. So even though, let's say, I can be teaching something like Socrates' Trial, and which I have been, that's a basic text that's taught in every intro class, the culture has changed. The students are different. We interact differently. The world is different. So even though it's the same text, it is a different experience every single time I teach it. And students with different backgrounds will recognize different things in the text. And I love that. I love that. To me, it's like the ancient Greek philosopher Heraclitus said, you can never step in the same river twice. And I think it's the same thing with the text. You are different when you read the text. The time is different when you read the text. So you can read the same text over and over and just get something new out of it. And same thing with my students. So that's what I learn from my students. I love that too.
How have your students changed since you first started teaching?
Well, let's see. They don't read as much. They don't read as much. But what I have learned is that I think that some older academics or people in education have looked at that as being more problematic than I think it has to be, because I think that what I've learned and also why I got into podcasting is that there's more than one way to consume information. There's more than one way to learn. And so just because right now people are not reading as much because there are more distractions, that doesn't mean that people are any less thoughtful or interested or intrigued or creative. It's just a different medium that's going on right now. So I think that this generation, I think that they need a bit more credit for how clever they are. Yes, they are more easily distracted. That's true. But I see in the classroom that when they do put the phones away or they are present, that they have a lot on their mind. They have a lot to say and they're very interactive and they're very clever and creative. And I absolutely enjoy them.
A lot of statistics are also showing that they are not as, I'm going to try to think how to word this, environmentally influenced to the extent of not being open-minded. So I guess what I'm trying to say is they may not have the exact same opinion that their parents did, you know?
Yeah, no. And you know what? I think one of the reasons is because of the university culture. You have more and more people going to university and more people of different economic brackets, different religions, different everything, which means that when students are in the classroom, they are likely to be around people that are different from them. And it's through those dialogues and that interaction and the friendships that are built as a result of that, that they change from their parents' point of view. Because it used to be, your friendships or romantic relationships were based on the town in which you lived. So chances are you are of the same ethnicity, same religion, same first language, all of that stuff, maybe similar professions with your families. But university, is a bit of a curveball because all of a sudden students are mixed together with people who are other than them, and that impacts them. And I think in a positive way.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, the more you're exposed to things, the more you can learn.
Yeah.
So we'll get back to the podcasting part. I mean, but it does all connect because your love for it. Talk to us about when you first started getting into that. Obviously, we know why now, right?
Yeah. So when I first started to get into it, this was what we were talking about before. I had the chair of my philosophy department. He had said that one of my colleagues needed to take a leave of absence and could I take over his class? And I said, sure, without asking what the class was. I don't know why I didn't ask what the class was, but I was in the middle of completing a bunch of work. I had a couple of conferences to attend. And so when the semester started, I just had asked for the secretary to give me the same textbook that my colleague had used. And it was a philosophy of sex and love class. And I mean, the textbook was so explicit. This is not my background. My background is in things like moral theory and existentialism. And all of a sudden, we're talking about things in this book that are, just talking about sexuality, really. And so there's a lot of questions and a lot of terminologies that I was not used to saying out loud. And I blushed the entire semester. It was a disaster. Then they ended up offering me the class again. And I said, yes.
How old were you?
This was only about 4 years ago.
So with colleague before you, male or female?
Male. Okay. So I was just confused because in something like a moral theory class, you can take a look at a philosopher like, let's say, Immanuel Kant, and it's very, very clear. This is the definition of a right action. This is how it works out. This is the definition of a wrong action. Here's an example. For example, I don't know if it's okay. You can edit this out if it's too much. But like in this textbook that I got, there was a whole chapter on masturbation. And I'm like, you know what? I told the students, I said, I do not know how to assign this. I don't know how to test you on this material. I don't know what to ask. I just had no clue what to do. And I was also having a hard time finding any philosophical academic value to the subject. So it was really a challenge for me after that semester to say, okay, I'm taking a break. They wanted me to keep teaching it. And I had to sit down and think, okay, what are the questions about sexuality where I can pull some of my background to analyze things? I ended up kind of falling in love with the class. Now it's my biggest class. It's always full. There's always a wait list. I teach a couple sections of it every term now. And I think that what I'm getting out of it is I'm seeing that the students also have a lot of questions, that there's this real, there's this really impoverished sex education that we have in the United States. And so by the time students are in university, they've already been more exposed to pornography So there's this idea of what is sex through that. They are a swiping culture, which means, and a hookup culture, which means that, you know, you don't just approach a stranger and ask them out on a date. That's creepy to them. There's also the issues of consent as well, where people are trying to navigate that. There's an awareness of different ways of being sexual, meaning, you know, same-sex relationships, polyamorous, all that. So they have got a lot to deal with. And it's crazy because it seems like there's more information about sexuality right now, but they are actually more reluctant to engage in relationships. So we kind of dive into what are the ideas driving that? Like, what are the ideas about what it means to be a woman, what it means to be a man? How are we being taught that you're supposed to be? Are we being taught that there's a rightness or wrongness? Where is the line? How does the law reflect some ideas about sexuality and even about race? How does Hollywood do it? So I dumped that textbook that I had been using and I reorganized it so that I felt more comfortable talking about these ideas. I didn't want to just talk about sex itself. I wanted to talk about, you said that word, ideas that I'm using, the ideas that underscore our legal and cultural understanding of what is sexuality. And so that's what I did.
So the struggle really is like, and when you're an educator, especially at that level, it's, you have to relate to what you're educating.
Yeah.
And you're able to deliver on that. You had to really think about how can I put this into something I can relate to that I know they can relate to, sort of thing. But you were able to pull that off. That's awesome.
There was a big lesson in there for me too. I think I was scared of the challenge because I'd never thought about things in this way. But then I went back actually to the classics. Plato wrote a book called The Symposium, and it is 9 men sitting around a table drinking wine, and they each stand up and give a definition of love. And so I said, okay, I'm going to go back to this. What does the, you know, the philosopher have to say? And then we look at some contemporary texts. There's this great article that was published in The Atlantic about 3 years ago by Kate Julian called The Sex Recession. And it's just talking about the way in which people are approaching sexuality now. So I use classic stuff, contemporary stuff, talked about Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton in order to kind of, I don't know, make the topic have a nice rounded discussion so that plenty of people can participate.
Sorry, I got us way off task there.
That is okay. Hey, look, I love talking about all this stuff. This is why I have a podcast. I love talking about all this stuff.
Exactly. So the podcast, I'm trying to think of where we left off there.
That's okay.
You were talking about what came after that class when they asked you again to do it. Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, I was just going to throw out there, when I was young, I was always in trouble in school for talking too much. I'm just like, dude, I do that for a living now.
Same here.
Yeah. I'm just like, I hope for any kid in school who just talks too much that maybe, you know, tap into that can actually be a talent and a moneymaker, that's not necessarily a bad thing. But at any rate, yeah, no, I got offered more classes and, you know, teaching that. So I guess the students liked it and there was a demand for it. So I investigated it more so that I could research and really deliver. So when somebody's paying for an education, I can actually bring something to the table. I guess with back to podcasting, it started out because of that experience. And then my partner at the time, he wasn't able to continue. So I asked Rudy Sallow, and he's been with me for the last couple of years, and he's just fantastic.
What was the original one called?
Drinking with Socrates.
Okay. Yeah. Drinking with Socrates. Then you, after that, you transitioned into Good is in the Details.
Good is in the Details. Yeah. Because Drinking with Socrates only addressed the issue of topics that were covered in Sex and Love, Philosophy of Sex and Love, and Good is in the Details, we have a much broader purpose there where we're using, if you will, kind of the Socratic method, this idea of recognizing what you don't know. And that is what Socrates was known for, was asking questions, not imposing knowledge on people, but trying to learn more about himself and learn about others through dialogue. So we are inviting people of a range of different backgrounds. We've had a NASA engineer. We've had a plastic surgeon. We've had some comedians. We've had an FBI agent. I mean, a range of topics so that we can really engage, yeah, in the art of dialogue. Because I think that there's something about that that's missing right now. We have this meme culture or even tweeting where everything is very quick. People are angry. People are divided. And we've lost this sense of taking a moment to sit down. And I think we have, I should say, of sitting down and listening and having a really fruitful discussion and learning more about ourselves and the other through that the discussion. So I kind of wanted to bring that back and have some faith that other people would enjoy hearing that too.
Fascinating.
Thank you.
Who was the first guest? What was the first episode about?
On Good is in the Details.
Yeah.
It was actually my friend, Stephen Elliott, who is a writer. He is very well known for, he's published several works, but he's very well known for his memoir that was called The Adderall Diaries. And it even got adopted into a screenplay and made a film. And Stephen is a very dear friend of mine. And I remember going over to his place and I said, hey, can I just kind of practice with you? Because I didn't know how I was going to pull this off, starting a whole new thing. And he is great. He was great. But you know how it is with the first episode? I mean, when I listened to it, I kind of cringed, not because of him, but because of me, that I didn't allow it to be a conversation. You know, eventually we evolved to do more conversation as opposed to straight interviews. But that one is a straight interview and I need to have him back on because he's just fantastic. So we talked a bit about memoir writing and what is truth, right? Subjectivity and subjective experience. And that also when you read somebody's memoir, you are very much aware that you're not picking up a history book exactly. And yet we still have this craving for understanding the way that somebody else experienced the world. So there is some truth to it, even though it is a singular person's truth. So we kind of talked about what is it that makes a memoir, a good one.
I'm glad that you brought up the conversation piece because that's what I always say about like what I'm doing now, like this podcast.
Yeah.
They're conversations. I hate saying interview because I don't have anything wrote down. I can think of a few questions beforehand that I'm going to ask, obviously. But I mean, I don't have a plan necessarily. I like it to be a conversation. If I'm listening to something, I would rather it be a conversation.
Yeah. I completely agree. And I'm not a trained interviewer, so I don't even know how it would, I mean, there's people who are excellent with that. But like I said, bringing back just the art of the dialogue. I mean, we've had some guests who have said things that I haven't necessarily agreed with. And I've been able to say, you know, I wanted to learn more about their position. And that's what conversation is, I think. Not only people you agree with, but people you disagree with. And, you know, sometimes, you know, like you said, a rabbit hole, can we go down a rabbit hole? It's like, yeah, why not? I mean, that's how conversations go.
Hey, listener, are you a podcaster or content creator? Well, you've got to hear this. I'm going to talk to you about Riverside.fm. I use Riverside to record all my interviews for this podcast. I absolutely love it. Super simple to use, and I get the audio quality of an actual recording studio. You can have video resolution up to 4K, uncompressed crystal clear audio, and continuous file uploading throughout your recording. I've used a lot of different things to record this podcast, and I'll be honest with you, some of them were just way more complicated than they needed to be. That will not be an issue with Riverside FM. It is super simple, and with that, you still have the quality audio, which is very critical. The support team is great and always available to assist you with any questions that you may have. Damn it, I'm serious when I say this. Riverside FM is the ultimate great recording solution for podcasters and content creators. Go online right now and check it out. You can do a free trial and give it a shot. I guarantee afterwards you will be so happy with it. You'll be looking through all the different packages and you will find one that meets your needs. Legitimize the content you are recording and creating. Go to riverside.fm right now to get started. I hate scripts, and you see like a lot of people like to give advice in the podcasting world, and I always see this horseshit advice of stick to a script. It'll help you stay on track and all that. I think this is freaking audio. I can edit it out.
Yeah.
So to try to like steer somebody on a course, the whole entire conversation just doesn't, or interview, I guess that'd be more of an interview, right? But doesn't seem like a conversation to me. So no, I'm glad you said that because I agree with that.
You know, the other thing I would say, if somebody's asking about podcast advice, I was on a panel talking about diversity and inclusiveness. And one of the things that I was thinking, I wonder what you would think about it, is that I know people want their podcast to be big. So they want to get big guests so that there's more, you know, reach. But I think that if you recycle the people who've done a million interviews and are just the blue check marks, you will really lose some great nuggets of conversation, and that should be the drive to the content Is this a good conversation? Is this something that I'm learning from? Is this entertaining in any way? And not just how much of a media presence that person has, because then you're not going to really get to exposing different voices. If we want to be honest about something like diversity or whatnot. I mean, I know a couple of our episodes have been done with people who have no social media presence whatsoever, but the conversation was fantastic. And there's other people who have had more of a social media presence and their episodes were great too. But I can't have that it be a popularity contest when it comes to, you know, being honest about having a good conversation. I don't think that podcasts will go very far that way.
Oh, I agree. And I think with what I do, it's just a little bit different. But I will say this though about what you just said. I agree with it because I can put out, and I love true crime. I do. Every month, once a month, I usually have a pretty good sized true crime podcaster that I chat with. Apple charts, top 100, whatever. Those are by far the most downloaded episodes. And they're fun. There's nothing wrong with them. But to your point, some of the most fun ones that I've had as far as I thought the best conversations were, one was an illustrator and one was an author of a book, like a science fiction book. It's the stuff like that that I've actually really enjoyed the most. And to be honest with you, aside from like the other benefits of like a bigger guest, right? Because they're able to bring in some of their listeners. But as far as my regular audience, they engage a lot with those other characters, those other stories. They relate to them a lot more and sometimes take a lot more away from them.
Yeah, I was looking at our numbers and seeing what were our top 10 episodes just to kind of get a sense of what is it that people like, you know, how did that happen, you know, those kinds of things. And one of our top 10 episodes is with somebody who has no social media presence whatsoever. And I remember wondering if it was a good idea to go with the episode, if anybody was going to like it or whatnot. And the response was just amazing. So I think that for me, that was one of the biggest lessons with podcasting is, you know, everybody says content, 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 but then people don't know. And I think you just have to go with your gut, because if you are doing what you think is interesting, then that will be infectious and mm-hmm. other people will be interested in it. I mean, I even tell my students this when it comes to their term papers. I give them a lot of leeway. I say, write what you think is interesting, because then you will enjoy writing it and I will think it's interesting. But if I force a topic onto you, then it's going to be boring as hell for you to write and it's going to be boring for me to read. So I'm really looking out for my own self because I'm the one who has to read all of them. But I think it's the same thing with podcasting. It's okay that not everybody is going to enjoy all of your episodes, but you have to be true to who you are and what you think is interesting. And that is what will make it successful, I think.
I agree. Another example, I guess I have, I had a conversation with a guy who has a popular podcast, not like crate, not like, you know, top of the chart, Apple popular, but has a popular podcast about the Cold War. I loved it. I loved it. Was it for everybody? Probably not. But the stories from that and then the advice that he could give from that were incredible.
That's awesome.
We talked about episode number one. Uh-huh. How have you evolved since then? And how have your co-host and how has the podcast evolved?
Rudy is my co-host is he's really great, but I've noticed that over time, our interactions have gotten, you know, like there'll be running jokes in there and it's gotten to be more fun. We know when a joke is coming or something like that. I don't know, our banter, I think, has gotten better, which is normal, you know, for people who are getting to know each other and doing a show. I think that I've also gotten better. I do a lot of the editing. I think I've gotten better at that. I think just over time, what I have really learned is some of the episodes where I was worried about, this is just like what we said, wondering, is anybody going to like this? I think this is neat. Does anybody else think it's cool? Those have always ended up being bigger ones. They always have been. The ones that I think I was the most concerned about. And maybe it's because I was being the truest to myself of what I thought was interesting and I was a little bit afraid. And so I think what I've learned over time is to go ahead and go for it. If I think it's interesting, this person has something to say and I want to share it and I want to learn from them, that's what I'm going for. Just trusting myself a bit more.
And you said earlier, that's contagious, right? When the listeners hear that.
Yeah.
And feel that from you.
Yeah, like the first episode I did with Stephen, for instance. Now, Stephen is a good friend of mine. And my biggest mistake as I listened to that, and I kept it so that I would always remember this, is that he and I actually, we disagree on many things. And it's funny, we are always making each other laugh. But I went into that treating it like an interview, and you could not tell by listening to it that he and I are actually really good friends. And that was the biggest mistake that I made, was that I wasn't allowing myself to be me, which, and I wasn't allowing that sense of that friendship to come through. And so I don't think that it's a great episode. Again, Stephen is wonderful, but that was my error, was maybe trying to be too proper or something like that. No, I mean, the podcasting is more fun the more somebody's personality shines through.
When did you realize that it was a mistake, the way you approached it?
I think soon after, when I listened to it back, soon after, I need to have him on again to kind of do a makeup. But yeah, because all of our conversations and all of our texts back and forth, they're all funny. He's even on my Twitter feed. I mean, he just gives me a hard time, and it's hilarious the way that we banter, and none of that came through in the interview. And that was definitely my fault.
I think it's great for the listeners to hear you saying that, because that's a really good example of something that can happen. But then how do you like approach it afterwards? So you say you realized that when you were going back and listening to it, then you always had that dilemma, like, what do I do with this content? Do I release it? You know, how do I approach it? But you did release it, but it's also good that you're talking about having another conversation with them.
Yeah. And I mean, I released it. It's, you know, it was my first time doing it on my own. And I just figured this is for me to remember learning, and for anybody else to also, you know, not be afraid to just start. Cause that's the thing, you just have to start. And I know so many people that have, you know, they've heard my podcast and then they'll interact and they'll say, oh, you know, I kind of want to do it. How do you do it? This or that. And then when they hear about the amount of time and energy that it takes into going into it, it's not just something you kind of like whimsically do. It's a craft, and you have to be dedicated to it. And I think that people are a bit surprised. So behind every episode that I release, there's about 10 hours of work behind it. So that would include the scheduling, if they have written a book, reading it, watching the film, researching them, the emailing back and forth, then the recording, and then the editing, and then posting all of that stuff. About 10 hours of work per episode. And it's a labor of love. I love doing all of it. That's not a complaint.
It's basically another work day.
Yeah.
People don't realize that unless they're doing it. And I'm not complaining about it, but it is really like another work day. You kind of release episodes, I don't want to, almost 2 weeks apart? Yeah. Has it always been that way?
Yeah, about 2 weeks apart. Yeah, I try to get, it's 2 to 3 episodes a month.
I was doing a couple a week when I first started, but to me, it was important to get like a kind of like a library of content out there. Like a back catalog, you know, because that stuff is important when somebody is discovering your podcast. The 2 weeks apart thing is much more realistic, like I just said, for the, like, and you just said, the 10 hours. That's a whole other work day. We all have families, but, you know, me, I would put it off to the last minute anyway. So,
yeah, I think I heard one time that the average number of podcasts and for a podcast that starts, or the average number of episodes, is something around 11, because that's when people give up, they stop. So there has to be this passion and desire to share. And yeah, and I definitely, every time I finish an episode, there's a part of me that starts to wonder, wait a minute, are we going to find more guests? Who are we going to find? The more, actually, Stephen gave me this advice, that Stephen Elliott, first guest, he said, you know what, do good work and then people will reach out to you. And that, we finally hit that turn a little while ago. And it's been very, very exciting, where it's like, oh, you want to be on our show? We're not reaching out to you. You want to be on our show? What can we do for you? And there have been some guests, you know, there's one guest in particular who's just, God, her book was so beautiful. It's called The Gravity of Joy. And after doing that episode, I had people texting and emailing, DMing that they bought her book after that. And it was so exciting to be part of that process, because her work was very, very good. And just thinking that, oh my God, I played some small role and more people encountering her work, was a really, really exciting thing. So that's one of the joys of the podcasting. You connect with people. That's what's, I mean, you know, I mean, we're recording and everything, but you don't know who needs to hear your voice or your content, and you could really do something for somebody.
Yeah, it's powerful. And that is a great feeling. I have some listeners that they will go and check out or listen to or whatever the person's doing, whoever I feature and talk to, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just the best feeling when, even if I talk to somebody who's like has a popular podcast and they hadn't heard of them before. So I'm going to go listen to that. And then they let you know, like, hey, I'm listening to this all the time. And then it's just the best feeling to know, especially when you introduce them to things that are, like you said earlier, hidden gems. When you know they trust you with that and they connect with you and they will go and support the people that you're supporting too. That is the best feeling.
Yeah, it's good. It's just, you know, like I said, I think podcasting is the new blogging and it's just a way of people to exchange. I mean, I don't know. It's such a cool medium of information and conversations and ideas. I just absolutely love it. And for people listening, hey, no matter how big or small the podcast is, if you like it, reach out and let them know, because that means so much on the receiving end. When somebody reaches out to me and tells me that they liked an episode or something like that, it means so much.
What are some things that you're kind of the podcast looking forward that you're looking to kind of evolve into or some things that are coming up?
Something I really, really want to do was when I first started Good is in the Details, I remember I was very, very tired and I didn't know why. I didn't know what was going on. And it turned out that I was pregnant and this was a surprise. I had no idea. And I was thinking, I have no idea how I'm going to do everything. I don't know how I'm going to pull this off. And I decided, you know what? My body is changing. There are things that are happening that I did not know were happening. Nobody taught me any of this. And I started a mini series called How Do You Maternity, where I interviewed other professional women talking about their experience. And I've done 5 episodes of those. 2 of them still need to be released. I want to do more of that. I think that there's something there where women discuss what their bodies went through, what their work life was like, because there are so many different ways in which maternity happens. And I know that that would be definitely a niche. But we're also going to do an episode with Rudy, my co-host, where I wouldn't be on and he would have a couple of men talking about how do you paternity, to talk about the things that they didn't know. Because it seems like with maternity and paternity, it almost feels like on-the-job training. Nobody tells you a lot of things that are going on. So we were discussing things from like early pregnancy. There was a woman who was in the military when she found out she was pregnant. There was an IVF story. There was somebody who had Crohn's. I mean, there were all of these different stories. And I thought, oh my God, I think there's a lot there. So I want to continue with that. And then also we have some great guests lined up. I mean, we've got somebody who's going to be talking about relationships. We have somebody who's going to be talking about the value of work from a theological lens about how to put stuff into your work. Yeah, some other authors and creative people. The FBI agent will be back on again. He's coming out with a book that's about corruption. And yeah, so we've got some returning guests. And I do want to do more of the how do you maternity thing. I think it's worth it to talk about that.
That's neat. It really is. Let me ask you a really tough question.
Uh-oh.
Before we wrap things up. If you had to pick, I'll say an episode or two to refer people to that, like if they were going to listen to your podcast for the first time, what episode or two would they be and why?
I think in season 1, it's the episode with the FBI agent. We actually made it 2-part, but I think it's called An FBI Agent, A Lawyer, and a Philosopher Walk Into a Podcast. And the reason I like it is because the guest, Jeff Cortese, I knew him in high school. So here we are fast forwarding to middle age and talking. And he is so open and honest. He has 5 children and talking about what it is like to be in law enforcement in this culture, in this day and age, and what does he think justice is. And the fascinating thing is that we happen to have recorded that on Martin Luther King Day. This was pre-COVID. So we could still be in a studio. And when I asked him what justice was, his answer was remarkably similar to Martin Luther King's answer. I was not expecting that. But he said, he kind of stopped and he said, I think this might seem a little cheesy, but I think it's about love. So this is when an FBI agent is describing what justice means. And he goes into more detail about it, but it blew me away. And then Jeff is also just a great personality. And then the other episode would be on this one called Understanding Joy. It's in season 2. It's with Reverend Dr. Angela Gorell. She's a professor at Yale. And her story is that she was promoting her book called The Gravity of Joy. And her backstory just had me blown away. I read her book in one sitting. I couldn't put it down. And the reason is because the story is about her getting this position at Yale Theology to do research and to teach about the meaning of life and joy. And at the same time she got that, within 3 weeks, she had three major tragedies happen in her family. And so then there she needed to go and walk into the classroom and talk about joy, research joy. And she was breaking. She was going through incomprehensible grief on the inside. And her book ended up being called The Gravity of Joy, that was about that dichotomy and what she learned. And it was just fascinating and beautiful. So I always tell people about those two episodes.
Everyone's definitely going to have to check those out. Us podcasters love to talk. So I'll let you talk about yourself and where to find the podcast and all that good stuff.
Oh, I just talk about myself. Well,
you know what I mean.
We are on. Yeah. Okay.
Shamelessly plug yourself now.
You know, Rudy's actually better at that. I tease him. I'm like, you're such a lawyer, because he does all that stuff. But at any rate, so I'm on Twitter at gdolsky. That's D-O-L-S-K-E. And on Instagram at profdolsky. And we're on Instagram, Good is in the details pod. And if anybody wants to email, good is in the details pod at gmail.com. Yeah, we're wrapping up season two. We're going to have season three again. We're going to, you know, with some of the guests that I told you about. We're always interested if anybody has a book or a project that they want to promote and discuss. We're definitely open to that if anybody wants to get in touch. And I really, really hope that our goal with the show is this idea of returning to the art of dialogue and the joy of learning, and that that's what people get out of the show. And thank you so much for having me on. Thank you. This has just been absolutely lovely. I really appreciate it. And I appreciate the work that you're doing for other podcasters out there. It's just very, very cool.
Thank you very much. You did a great job breaking that down there, by the way. But no, thank you very much. And I appreciate you taking the time to chat with me. I think what you're doing is awesome. And I encourage everybody to check it out. So thanks again, really.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening, and thanks for telling a friend. But more importantly, thank you for supporting independent content creators. I hope you enjoyed this episode and continue to listen to the upcoming ones. I'm really trying to do something special here by highlighting all the amazing things all these amazing content creators are doing. I hope you continue to join me on my journey. I'm Jeff, aka Podcast Father, the Indie Podcaster. Keep being you, keep being great.
What's up, Combat Crew? Matt here from the Mortal Kombat Podcast, and I wanted to take a second to let you all know that on Friday, December 17th, starting at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, we will be hosting our annual charity stream live at twitch.tv/naturalhattrick. That's NTRLHATTRICK. And this year, we will be raising funds for Heart Support and their mission to make mental health care more accessible for all. We will be playing a custom 5e D&D game where your donations directly affect the game. You can cast creatures to battle our heroes, cast spells for or against them, buy a mystery token to put down the Plinko board, or summon a mighty dragon. And we are setting out to raise $1,000. We would love to have you come hang out and have some fun with us. And as an added bonus, if we make our goal of $1,000, the folks from the podcast will be doing the One Chip Challenge live on that stream. Seriously, Google it. It's pretty wicked. Hope to see you all there on Friday, December 17th, starting at 4 p.m. Pacific Time.